Hello, this is Peter Hill Explains, where, as you can probably hear, I'm giving a quick podcast as I walk. Now, it's sort of strange. I had been looking at releasing a set number of podcasts each day at 4 o'clock local time in Sydney. That's the way, the time I selected. But then I realised, look, it's I'm spending too much time fussing about that, so I'll just produce them and release them as I go on it. And it's sort of like athletic training where you're actually trying to podcast and put together ideas relatively quickly and produce at a high rate. You might ask why I'm doing this. Well, I've got to get back to teaching, and there's you should have some sort of rehab or ease into it. Now, just the powers that be, the political system as it is, they've decided, no, they're not going to do that at all, and put me in straight away. And so that happened my first time. So I've had one heart operation, came back to school, very traumatic in terms of being thrown in the deep end without any preparation after the big operation. And unfortunately, my valve they put into me, I had pulled out and it was leaking, so I was in double stress. So this time, when this valve came along, I decided, look, I have to really take charge of my own rehab, my own training. So I've been involved in training for many years and know the importance and the efficiency of it and the impact of it. And so if I can actually get my skills to it, I can actually overcome it. And in general, going through a phase of picking up minor errors each time, working on them, and then eventually opening up, trying to actually get there. I suppose like an athlete or something like that, you're running ahead to do things. Now, one of the things that there are various ideas getting together, that you can, there's important things to teach, which are outside the gamut of the sort of safe teaching, which is, I think it's really sort of frozen in time around the 70s, 1970s, and then there was a sort of a feeling through the 80s, 90s, and 2000, you know, what would happen if this actually happened, and now the future has actually happened, so a lot of the teaching material is definitely out of date, particularly in genetics, where I want to actually cover CRISPR. Oh, I'll have to try and remember that again. So part of this is to actually really force your brain. Was it CRISPR? Oh, close. Something like regions, interspaced. Palindromic repeats. I'll have to go back again. I've read it again. It's just gone out of the head again. There's that aspect, and then there's also the aspect of actually explaining things through podcasts, but also the activity aspect of it. So if you can actually build it, you build a physical model, which is easy to get, you can sort of use up the cognitive load if it's a difficult model to build. But if you give them a model, or give people a model, they can, they're not aware of it, but they've stored a huge amount of cognitive information. So say that the model that I have for the hand, where your palms, the you put your stem cell and it goes up into different paths of your finger, being a neuron, astrocyte, gaffer tape cell, defense cell, and brain juice cell. That's something which is very powerful because you can, if you've got a model and you can go forward. And so the more, so it's like a real, sort of like driving a car or something like that, where you have to select what you describe and how you put it forward. And students needs. And so one of the things I really wanted to get to is CRISPR technology, and to actually try and actually decode this to what's going on. And one of the very tempting things to do is actually talk about the archaic cells, the bacteria, and your cells. That's got a very high cognitive load. So I suppose, and then there's the introduction of new material, which is over and above what's taught at school. So one of the critical things taught at school is that, I suppose, just a general confusion about the chromosome, the wound-up chromosome doubled at the point of doubling, or the actual functional chromosome unwound. So that unwound chromosome is not taught at school. The nuclei, the nucleoles, these are the little yo-yos that the DNA spreads around twice and wounds up and goes clockwise, anti-clockwise, and allows it to coil up without twisting. So one of the things is that if you wind up something, you actually twist it. I don't know if you've ever known that with a garden hose, you've wound that up. And so that's, there's many, many different points. The major thing is about the fact that the idea that we teach basically the eukaryotic genes are very, the way we teach them is very simple. They're just line and point A, B, the stop. Whereas in the, our actual genes have a whole series of codes to actually tell us when to express them. So they're a code. So if you actually put in the correct chemical, the code will then activate that part of the gene. So there's codes and there's exons and introns. So the gene is actually not one thing. It's actually in little chunks, and then that's read out and the inactive chunks are removed afterwards. So that's very important to come across. So what I'm going to discuss now is just moving that Cas9 and the RNA, guide RNA, there you go, guide RNA. So look, this is the entire thing, is that what's happening is I'm having two series of memories, the actual base memories are coming back, and then I'm sort of memorising how to actually teach this stuff. So just going across the Cas9, trundles along your DNA. It's an enzyme, and you have to probably teach what an enzyme is, but it has inside it a little bit of pre-programming, which is 20 bases, and when it finds something that matches the 20 base, it goes snap-o and cuts your gene. So you can program up a 20 base sequence and it'll go and snap the gene, and if you've got enough good material hand around, you can actually put in the gene that you want, or the piece of RNA code that you want there, and there's actually more things to it. So perhaps trying to get the idea of what an enzyme is and a protein, and for me it's very difficult because I'm a quantum physicist, so I know about the electron wave functions and the actual structure of the orbitals giving different atoms or chemical bonds degrees of freedom that they can bend over, or how they're attracted to each other. So I can sort of, whereas people see it as a stick and ball model, I see it much more as a complex Lego machine. So look, there is a temptation to actually try and tell people what a protein is, which is a string of amino acids where it goes nitrogen, carbon with a side chain, carbon with an oxygen, then kicks onto the next nitrogen. So that's a back chain of the amino acids, and try and explain it like that. But really, and that you can build these proteins up and they can fold and have components around it. What's more important there is, besides the mechanical stuff of the protein, you've got the electron clouds, which can actually move up and down the protein. Charges can move, and it can actually be charged and actually therefore moved. So the actual thing in a protein where it actually slams down or changes or responds, it's all electric charges. In fact, the fact that if you had DNA out and it was fully charged, it would float off be repelled from each other. So you try and pack it into a bag and it would try and spring out. It's a sort of a very amazing. So the quantum mechanics gives you very much the charges or the dynamics of what's going on. And so in teaching, do you do that or what do you do? So what I'm going to propose is a method of teaching the CRISPR technology. And it's a really important technology, I think, to go in, because it's something which actively happens on a piece of DNA, and as it happens, you begin to sort of work out what's going on. So I'm just going to break for a while as I break my walk, and then when I get back, I'll discuss a method of developing this idea further with a practical demonstration, almost first off, without prior logic or prior explanation of it all. Okay. I'll continue pretty later. So back again, podcasting again as I'm continuing my walk. It's pretty late at night. Hawthorn, the local AFL team's playing the Crows, and it's pretty cold. So the family's around there. I'm out in the cold, and it's winter here, so it's pretty cold weather. But I'm much, much fitter than I was previously at this time of recovery. Last time when I was at this time of recovery, I was still, I had a new valve in, but I was still struggling for breath, so it's a real great bonus. So we're talking about trying to teach CRISPR, which is gene editing, and the actual overall approach. And then there's the sort of very logical approach, where you start from atoms and bases and genes and all these cells. But as you explain it, each time going through, you have a cognitive threshold, and so as students, for various reasons, miss out and things, lose confidence for it. Well, this is a very good way of teaching, very structured and methodical and logical way of teaching. It's got its minus points, so if you go and talking about the cell and the structure of the cell theory and human history and all that additional information, although it's very interesting for us, for the student coming into it, they may not pick it up completely. So in general, and even information like the DNA is inside a nucleus, and the structure there is very worthwhile explaining, but it's difficult to go ahead. So what I'd like to do is actually propose a teaching method which just is rather, I think, rather simple. So what you require for this is a garden hose, or ideally two garden hoses of different colours. If you can possibly get it, yeah, I think you can get a reddish one and a green one, different ones. And the fundamental idea is that you're saying, look, you've all heard of DNA. I think most people have heard of DNA. Most people will be able to draw the double helix. A very first thing, this is knowing what students know before. But in this process, the major point you want to get across is that DNA is a fibre. And what you're going to say is that you're going to lay the two hoses out next to each other. And the hose is rather a long thing. You may not be able to have it in the classroom, but outside. And that just also gets the idea that the DNA is a long fibre. Now, you can talk about the structure and the actual coding, but you might want to do that a bit later on. And then what you want to do is, rather than talk about a complex code and letters and stuff like that, you may just want to place a simple red dot sticker at the piece of DNA. So you align the two codes, the two cables, two hoses together, and there'll be a discussion about how it forms the double helix and twists and what sticks the two hoses together. And just, you'd say that there's a natural glue between the two hoses, which is this hydrogen ions, H plus forms a natural glue between the two hoses. So you have the two hoses, and one of the hoses, this is one colour, you'll say that, oh, this is the information codes, this hose here is the backup hose, And so it's the cap hose. So the information is written as a code on the inside of one hose. And that will be described later, or they may already know it. But in terms of the actual ACGT, ATGC coordination, that's really not necessary. So we've got this piece of string, and you say, this is basically written out here in long form, is how to actually build you, how to actually make the chemicals and proteins to make you. So we're going to put a red mark and say that's a point in your DNA, and that's either make it very simple, a mutation which will cause you to die, or a mutation which will give you cancer, or something that's wrong and you want to get rid of it or silence it or move it, stop it going on. So rather than say that the discussion is a single point, no, it's a whole region, but a whole region can be have a characteristic code that you've broken, that you know this is a single point. So it all looks the same, but this is just a marker to show you where it is. So this is, say, a red sticker. And then you have these two hoses which are laid out side by side, and the explanation that these get twisted up, and the fact that inside every cell of you, that it's 2 meters of this inside every cell. So these are really small, really small. So this may doubt people. I don't know whether people can use it. To get that 2 meter stuff is, rather than tell it to them directly, get them a guessing competition. Given that the cell is this far, how long is the DNA inside it would be a good guessing competition. Because getting them to guess information provides the memory capacity of asking the question over again, how long is it, how long is it, how long is it, and this is the right answer, and say an emotional reward to someone who gets it, really burns it in. I've actually tested that by telling them directly or getting them to guess and actually testing them after. The actual guess thing is extraordinarily high. Not in the same lesson, but if you test them a week or 2 weeks later, that information is definitely burned in if you go that way. This is why I'm actually telling the various models from experience, where you test and look at the various models. So I'm a bit more rigorous in testing people. I don't test them to give marks back, but I do tests, and I take the entire test up and scan the whole lot of them through a high-speed scanner and analyse them, so I can actually see what has been learnt or what's understood, or whether you'll give them a problem where they have to use structural information like the length of DNA or something like that to go in. So at the moment we've got a physical model, and there is the thing about getting the physical model and getting people to help and explain, and I suppose another thing is that you explain it, then you point to someone else to see if they, rather than saying what it is, but see if they can explain and rate what's going on as a relatively good explanation. So you have to develop your Cas9. So what you can show is here is a machine, a pair of scissors that cuts a piece of paper, and show this is a machine that's cut. Now, what we have here is we've got to have a molecular machine, and this is what I can recommend doing, is to use a combination of cloth on the inside, formed with a large copious amounts of silver foil, or just, if you really want to, just heavy amounts of silver foil to get the structure of it. So you should be able to look up on the internet what a Cas9 molecule looks like, but it's actually a basically a big, like a clasped hand. And through that is the guide RNA. So the RNA is the actual messenger. Well, there is such thing as messenger transfer, which is carries the individual bases, base pairs up, and the RNA, the ribosome RNA, but that's sort of almost a tautology because it's ribosomic, ribonic nucleic acid service. But you've got these different DNAs. So this is a guide RNA. So RNA can be a tool as well as actually transcription stuff. And that fits in your Cas9. So you've built a Cas9 molecule which is thick and build it around, and you can actually wind that. Now, this is not going to be long and complex. The entire idea of a demonstration is to actually minimize the cognitive load to bring in a piece of information. The building in deep information is something that they really have to do themselves by research. But for me, in when I'm building myself up cognitively, I have to go back over all the information and structure it out and actually comb and grade it out, communicate and stuff like that. So what you do is you have Cas9, you fold it over with a strip of paper inside it with, say, a second red dot. Now, this is just to show it's going along, and then you can actually pull that along the two hoses, the two hoses together until the guide RNA matches the red dot on one side, and then you have to actually just explain that at this point this allows a whole lot of electrons to move within the, that's what moves inside a an enzyme. It's actually the structuring of electric charge. What else moves? It's not necessarily a chemical reaction. So this allows a pincer movement, which allows the chopping of DNA. Now, you're not going to actually chop your DNA with a knife, because you'll get some angry gardeners or housewives or whatever, whoever is concerned about preserving a hose. They'll never give you another thing if you cut it. But this is where you've got your picture of your scissors, which you're saying is the equivalent to scissors. You've brought that across. You have a piece of paper with the actual DNA written on it, and ideally you should be able to have a piece of paper with the ATCG sequence base pairs written on it, and a matching piece of RNA, and actually with your scissors cut it across. So you actually just transfer the actual physical process of what's happening with the with the Cas9. I think there's a Cas11. There's other ones which cut in a staggered fashion or more complex fashion, but Cas9 is the general one, and then explain what's going on as an activity. Now, in general, you have to be in an environment where the school or the education system allows you to teach it, because the amount of time that you spend here, you can easily get someone saying, "Oh, well, this is not on the syllabus. We're still learning some really basic stuff." But perhaps I won't be able to teach this in Australia. But the thing is that I hope there are people overseas that can teach CRISPR technology and the importance of it going ahead. I've been involved, I suppose, in early 2000s, the very first, very early genetic disease teaching, testing from umbilical blood. I think that took 3 weeks and thousands of dollars for it to be tested. So we're living in a much, much different world at this point in time. So just to recap. I've previously gone on about CRISPR reading the genetic code. This is production of a physical model just to teach a simple theme, and stripping that right back, the model right back, by to have a teaching model with the least amount of detail in it possible. Thanks for listening. I hope that you can implement it, and moreover, actually talking through the model in your head. These are two garden hoses, a piece of silver foil or aluminium foil bent up in the shape of a fairly chunky piece of enzyme. Although that model is may not be physically built, you can actually build the virtual model in your head and recognize that that makes the entire process more memorable about what's actually going on. It's actually the actual outcome is only one or two steps away. Thanks for listening.